The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The president, he tweeted on Sunday, quote, "The fake news is reporting a complete fabrication that I am concerned about the meeting my wonderful son Donald had in Trump Tower. This was a meeting to get information on an opponent, totally legal and done all the time in politics, and it went nowhere. I did not know about it."
It must have been a shocking moment for Don Jr. when his father threw him under the bus. He probably thought, oh my God, Dad knows I exist! We shouldn't be surprised to see Trump's least favorite non-Tiffany child at the center of this scandal, because he's at the center of pretty much every Trump scandal. If Donald Trump is the Death Star, Don Jr. is the exhaust port. Let's examine how Donnie has further befouled his dad's already soiled name, beginning with his shady business empire. In 2006, Jr. was assigned to the family's new hotel condominium project, the Trump Soho, which, despite its name, wasn't in the coveted Soho neighborhood. It was actually near the entrance ramp to the Holland Tunnel. For those of you unfamiliar with New York City geography, calling that building the Trump Soho is like marketing your asshole as Vagina Acres, which, full disclosure, I have done. Anywho, the Trump family got sued for lying to buyers about the building's sales figures, and Donnie wrote in his emails that nobody would ever find out about the scam because only people on the email chain or in the Trump organization knew about it. Aw, this is about one step above writing a note that says, "Dear crime, I am guilty of you." Donnie also co-runs his dad's business, and he isn't doing much to discourage the worry that foreign powers could use it as a way to influence Trump. Earlier this year, Donnie announced a visit to India, where he'd be giving a foreign policy speech and peddling condos. Indian newspapers advertised the Trump Organization's availability for totally ethical meetings by inviting interested parties to have dinner with Donnie for $38,000. Or for $39,000, they'd give you dinner without having to meet Donnie. Of all the Trump scandals that Donnie has bungled into, none is more important slash stupid than his interactions with Russia.
Donald Trump Jr. and others from the Trump team met with a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower in June 2016 after Don Jr. got an email promising him dirt on Hillary Clinton. We know Trump Jr. was interested in the information because he replied, quote, "If it's what you say, I love it."
The most embarrassing part was when the bottom of the email read, "Sent from my crime phone." The Russia investigation has been the bane of Trump's administration, so it was vital for them to convince everyone that nothing suspicious happened in that meeting, something Don Jr. has succeeded brilliantly at.
These are intelligent people, and they cannot come up with one measurement.
But it's all turnout. Supposed contradictions in the Trump Tower meeting. Do you want any comments on that, Donnie? Because they're hitting you on that for contradictions. I mean, they're calling it worse than contradictions, obviously.
Hello?
Yeah. Donnie, what is your reaction to all of that?
Hello?
We're going to see if we can reconnect with Donald Trump Jr. on this because we can't seem to hear him. Donnie, you hear that?
Nope.
We didn't know where he went.
Yeah, reception is kind of spotty when you're calling from a fleeing Bronco. Don Jr. was also in close contact with WikiLeaks leading up to the election. He even asked them to leak him information on Hillary. But it's okay, because at one point he also messaged WikiLeaks that their communication was off the record. Oh, WikiLeaks, bless his heart. Everyone can see that Don Jr. is Trump's biggest weak spot, even another one of his weak spots.
Bannon put it this way. He said, you realize where this is going. This is all about money laundering. Their path to expletive Trump goes right through Paul Manafort, Don Jr., and Jared Kushner. They're going to crack Don Jr. like an egg on national TV.
How does he know eggs crack? When he eats breakfast, he just unhinges his jaw and swallows them whole. Donnie even met alleged Russian agent Maria Butina at an NRA dinner before the election. Man, anytime there was collusion going on, Donnie was there. He shows up everywhere. He's like the Forrest Gump of collusion. This sad, sticky wad of congealed hair gel has spent his whole life seeking his dad's approval and failing at it. And now, he might be the one to bring down Trump's presidency. So keep up the good work, buddy.
Wouldn't that be sweet? Just sweet. I don't care who brings down Trump's presidency, as long as someone does. Hello and welcome to a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler here at The Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. It's Thursday, so Howie Klein will be along. We'll go over what happened in Tuesday's elections and who's up next, because it's August. It's a busy primary month as we work our way towards the big midterm elections in November. But there's a lot of news to get started with today, so let's just let's get started, shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And we start today with good news for a change. We actually have good news to share with you. Tribune Media has backed out of its proposed $3.9 billion merger with Sinclair Broadcast Group. And to top it off, they say they'll be filing a lawsuit against the broadcasting giant for allegedly breaching their merger agreement. Aww. In an announcement early this morning, Tribune blamed Sinclair for the regulatory roadblocks that the deal encountered at the FCC. Last month, the FCC voted unanimously to subject the merger to an administrative law proceeding, a taxing and time-consuming process that was expected to kill the deal. And now the deal is dead. Ding dong. Unfortunately, Sinclair Media still owns more television stations than any other group, and I don't think they're going to stop with their efforts to expand. But, hey, we'll take small victories wherever we can get them, right? Right. Okay, next story.
Today, we announce criminal charges against Christopher Collins, a United States congressman. Congressman Collins is charged with insider trading and lying to the FBI.
Whoops. Yes, Republican Congressman Chris Collins of upstate New York was arrested and charged with federal security fraud yesterday related to an Australian pharmaceutical company that counted him as a shareholder and a former director. The company is called Innate Immunotherapeutics. They issued a statement saying it was cooperating with U.S. investigators. Collins turned himself in to the FBI in Manhattan and announced he would plead not guilty to charges related to insider trading. Part of the federal indictment involves a phone call prosecutors say Collins made to his son during last year's White House congressional picnic, during which he allegedly passed along an insider tip for stock trading. Collins made a lengthy statement last night, which ended with him saying he won't answer any questions on the subject, he won't resign, and he'll remain on the ballot running for re-election.
Because my focus is to defeat the charges in court, after today, I will not address any issues related to Innate Immunotherapeutics outside of the courtroom.
That'll hold up.
As I fight to clear my name, rest assured, I will continue to work hard for the people and constituents of the 27th Congressional District of New York, and I will remain on the ballot running for re-election this November.
Good luck with that. Actually, it's a very, very red district. So, you know, the way Republicans are, they don't care if their people break laws, if they're, you know, if they do horrible things, that's okay. Remember, what was his name? Greg Gianforte from Nebraska, who punched out a reporter and the next day he was elected. Yeah, as a Republican for you. Despite reports suggesting that the NRA is in financial trouble, its legislative lobbying arm this week announced a seven-figure advertising buy to support the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. Planned Parenthood Action Fund has a six-figure ad buy planned to try to defeat the nominee. This is juicy. During a closed-door fundraiser for Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers, Congressman Devin Nunes admitted that Republicans were holding off on impeachment proceedings against Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to avoid derailing Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court.
So it's a bit complicated, right? And I say that because you have to. So we only have so many months left, right? So if we actually vote to impeach, okay, what that does, that triggers the Senate then has to take it up. Well, then you have to decide what you want right now because the Senate only has so much time. You want them to drop everything and not confirm the Supreme Court justice, the new Supreme Court justice. So that's part of why I don't think you have, you're not getting from, like I've said publicly, Rosenstein deserves to be impeached. I mean, so, and I don't think you're going to get any argument from most of our colleagues. The question is the timing of it right before the election.
Ah, the timing.
So the Senate has to start.
The Senate would have to start. The Senate would have to drop everything they're doing and start with impeachment on Rosenstein. And then you take the risk of not getting Kavanaugh confirmed. So it's not a matter of that any of us like Rosenstein. It's a matter of timing.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about the audio. That audio was recorded by a member of the group Fuse Washington, a progressive organization that paid $250 to attend this event, surreptitiously recorded it, and they gave the recording to Rachel Maddow, who aired it last night. Nunes also said that it's important for Republicans to retain control of Congress after the midterms so they can continue to protect the president.
So therein lies, so it's like your classic catch-22 situation where, I mean, we're at a, this what puts us in such a tough spot. If Sessions won't unrefuse and Mueller won't clear the president, we're the only one. Which
it's
is
hard
really
to hear, right?
That's why I keep, and I'm thank you for saying that, by the way. I mean, we have to keep all these things. We have to keep the majority. If we do not keep the majority, all of this goes away.
If we do not keep the majority, all of this goes away. Yes, it does. All the more reason you need to vote for the Democrats in November, whoever they are. There was one more clip. Nunes admitted that if a political campaign colluded with a foreign government to release stolen emails, that would be a criminal act.
Now, if somebody thinks that my campaign or Kathy's campaign is colluding with the Chinese or you name the country, hey, could happen. It would be a very bad thing if Kathy was getting secrets
from
the Portuguese, let's say. Just because I'm Portuguese, my bad. So if Kathy was getting secret information from the Portuguese, may or may not be illegal, but ultimately, let's say the Portuguese came and brought her some stolen email. She decided to release those. Okay, now we have a crime, right? Somebody stole the email, gave Kathy released. Well, if that's the case, then that's criminal.
If that's the case, then that's criminal. Again, substantively, it is hard to argue with the idea that it is bluntly criminal for anybody to have been involved in the dissemination of stolen emails as part of a political campaign. Substantively, we agree, right? But with federal prosecutors now claiming in a federal indictment that WikiLeaks and DC Leaks and Guccifer 2.0 were the means by which stolen emails were actually disseminated during the presidential election, and with lots of still accruing evidence that people associated with the Trump campaign and the president's family and the president himself helped in that dissemination during the campaign, it cannot help that the lead opponent of the Russia investigation privately concedes when he thinks nobody's recording him, that sort of activity, if proven, that would definitely be criminal.
Criminal. Criminal. Yes. Ever feel like the walls are closing in on you? There's a big story that I don't see getting enough traction. But Isaac Arnsdorf, the ProPublica reporter who broke the story about three of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago cronies secretly shaping Veterans Administration policies, he appeared on MSNBC last night with Chris Hayes to shed more light on this insane story. We learned that Ike Perlmutter, the chairman of Marvel Entertainment, Bruce Moskowitz, a Palm Beach doctor, and Mark Sherman, a lawyer, make up an informal council that is exerting sweeping influence on the VA from Mar-a-Lago.
They're involved in everything. They speak with VA officials every day on the phone.
Amazing.
Or they have them fly down to Mar-a-Lago at taxpayer expense to meet with them, to go over things. And they have a hand in basically all manner of policy and personnel decisions that have been coming out of the VA for the past year and a half.
Every day?
As often as every day, absolutely. Maybe multiple times a day.
And this is on. This isn't on like, oh, we've got some charity thing we want to set up on the side. This is like how everything about the policy for the largest health care system in the United States.
Yeah, this is like how much health care for veterans should be provided by the government-run VA system versus how much should be done by private doctors. This is like what should the VA do to modernize its electronic health records technology, a $10 billion contract that they were negotiating, and these
Amazing.
Guys were all over it. This is who should the leadership of the VA be? Who do we want in key roles? And the people who didn't get along with the Mar-a-Lago crowd got passed over or pushed out.
Yeah, this is remarkable. They're basically running personnel. It's like a board of a company. You compare it in the article. It's a board of a company, and these are the, you know, there's their employees. They have to answer to them. If they don't like them, then they're kaput.
Well, yeah, some people were comparing it to like a board of directors pounding a CEO to turn around a troubled company. But, you know, board of directors, these members of a corporate board usually have some kind of expertise or knowledge or insight that they're providing. They're experienced business
usually.
People. But these guys, they don't have any relevant experience for veterans' health care. And so all these officials at the VA are scratching their heads wondering, who are these guys and what business do they have telling us what to do? And the answer is that they have the president's ear.
I just want to be clear. Like, this doesn't happen. This isn't a thing that happens where presidents come into power and they just say, hey, I've got some buddies or I got some members of my club who pay me hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They're going to go with you and they're going to whip you into shape, listen to everything they say. Like, that's not a thing that normally happens.
Nothing's normal about this administration.
So there is this statute from the 1970s. There is a legal mechanism for federal agencies to impanel outside advisors of experts who they want to consult on stuff. But if you do that, then you have to have cost controls and you have to have oversight and you have to have transparency. And obviously, they weren't interested in any of that. They were doing this completely in secret. And basically, the only reason that anyone outside a few officials at the VA who dealt with them, the only reason anyone knows about this is because of this reporting.
That's amazing. It's groundbreaking reporting that these three yahoos, rich yahoos, who hang out at Mar-a-Lago are basically running things. They're the shadow VA administration. I wonder how Dr. Ronnie would have fit into their little gang. There was a clip that Chris Hayes played that I didn't pull the audio of it from sometime last year when I think his name was Shumkin. I forget his name. The ousted VA head was still, you know, in charge of the VA. And Trump, in one of his cabinet meetings, was talking about having a meeting on the VA down at Mar-a-Lago. And he turned to Shulkin, I think it was Shulkin, and said, will you be there? And he said, no. The head of the VA was not invited to Mar-a-Lago to be in on this meeting with these three people who have nothing to do with the government where they're running it.
Shulkin.
Thank you. I knew it was something like that. Anyway, it just shows that this administration has no business being in office. I guess now would be a good time to bring this up. 44 years ago, well, last night, this happened.
America needs a full-time president. And a full-time Congress, particularly at this time with problems we face at home and abroad, to continue to fight through the months ahead for my personal vindication would almost totally absorb the time and attention of both the President and the Congress in a period when our entire focus should be on the great issues of peace abroad and prosperity without inflation at home. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Yay! Well, that happened 44 years ago last night. 44 years ago today, Richard Nixon left his office, waved goodbye. I think he held up a peace sign, which is ironic, and got on the helicopter and left the White House and rode off into oblivion. Donald Trump, you could do it. Come on. Today's a good day, good a day as any. Instead, what happened today? Well, Trump is still at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf resort on a, quote, working vacation, playing golf. And his vice president, Mike Pence, spoke at the Pentagon. Yes, he did. Mike Pence warned of the advancements that potential adversaries were making and issued what amounted to a call to arms to preserve the military's dominance in space.
As President Trump has said, in his words, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. And so we will. And that's precisely why we're beginning the process of establishing the Space Force as the sixth branch of our armed forces.
Oh, God.
Just as in the past when we created the Air Force, establishing the Space Force is an idea whose time has come. The space environment has fundamentally changed in the last generation. What was once peaceful and uncontested is now crowded and adversarial. Today, other nations are seeking to disrupt our space-based systems and challenge American supremacy in space as never before.
So we can't afford Medicare for all. We can't afford to feed our people. We can't afford housing for the poorest among us. We can't afford food stamps, right? We can't afford so many things, but we can afford a space force. Plans to set up a new military branch have been met with fierce opposition from some inside the Pentagon and within the national security community more broadly. The proposal would need approval from Congress. All the more reason to vote for the Democrat come November. It's that simple. Ah, these are crazy times we're living in. Absolutely crazy times we're living in. All right, we'll take a break and come back on the other side and get Howie Klein on the line and talk about what happened in Tuesday's election and what's coming up in our future. Ooh. But first, let's check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report.
It's Thursday, August 9, 2018.
The EPA this summer proposed a rule that may allow a number of new products to contain asbestos.
Trump's EPA is bringing asbestos back. California pushes back against Trump's rollback of mileage and emissions standards as California shatters the record for hottest month ever recorded and hottest rainfall. Plus,
still have time to act.
Bad news and good news in a scary new global warming study.
All of those scary stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So in other words, you're saying that they might come out making asbestos look not as dangerous as it really is in their evaluation.
Exactly.
Hey, MAGA, making asbestos great again. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, the summer of heat records continues to continue.
Indeed, it does. More shocking records shattered in this record-breaking global warming turbocharged summer of 2018. The hottest rainfall ever recorded on the planet, 119 degrees, fell on Imperial, California last week.
The hottest rainfall?
Yes, it is extremely rare to have rainfall above 100 degrees.
I mean, this is the water? The water itself is above 100 degrees?
Yes, 119 degrees.
Wow.
And Death Valley in California broke the record for the all-time hottest month in recorded history. That was in July, breaking the record that Death Valley set just last year. Meanwhile, retail gas prices are going up. The price of crude oil spiked this week in anticipation of the Trump administration reimposing sanctions on Iran, including its oil exports, in coming months. But Politico reports that pain at the pump for consumers likely won't be as bad as the last time gas prices were this high because, thanks to President Obama, fuel efficiency standards are a lot higher today, so families don't have to fill their gas tanks quite as often. Speaking of fuel efficiency standards, as expected, the Trump administration last week proposed weakening future vehicle mileage standards that would have saved consumers even more in fuel costs starting in 2022. Analysts say big oil will be the big beneficiary from increasing oil consumption. Even the EPA's own data estimates that 40,000 more Americans will die every year from the increase in air pollution. But important to note, these Trump rollbacks are not a done deal. You can weigh in during the short window for public comment. Speak up at regulations.gov. The Trump EPA is also proposing revoking California's authority to set its own higher standards, credited with reducing the state's notorious air pollution. This week, California pushed back in what promises to be a protracted legal battle. The state regulator, the California Air Resources Board, issued a scathing and detailed report refuting the administration's rollback as, quote, contrary to the facts and the law.
That's not a bug. That's a feature.
Well, California says it plans to hold automakers to those tighter standards to maintain public health benefits.
Good. States' rights. Remember when Republicans used to believe in that sort of thing?
The Trump EPA is also bringing asbestos back.
Yay!
Proposing a new rule to allow companies to use it in some products with agency approval. Asbestos is banned in most countries because it causes mesothelioma and lung cancers, but it's not banned in the U.S. despite killing thousands of Americans every year. Now, the EPA says it's just closing a loophole, but critics say no amount of asbestos is safe and only an outright ban on all uses is sufficient.
It only kills about 40,000 people a year and is banned pretty much everywhere else in the world except for here. What are you worried about, Des?
Finally, a message of hope from scientists who are pushing back against media coverage of their new study on global warming's long-term catastrophic consequences. The Hot House Earth study concludes that if global temperatures rise more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, a domino effect could kick in, triggering self-reinforcing climate change feedbacks that push the climate system into hothouse conditions, rendering large parts of the Earth uninhabitable. However, scientist and co-author Diana Liverman of the University of Arizona tells the Green News Report that the good news is that with action, it's all completely avoidable.
So Hot House Earth is not our destiny. It's an option that we could choose. Hopefully we're going to choose a much more stable path and we don't kick off all of these feedbacks that take us to a much hotter environment.
Well, I hope we don't, but I'm starting to run out of hope. Is that just me?
Dr. Liverman says she sees hope in political and social movements demanding action all around the world.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't give up on us, I know. We can still come through. Don't give up on us, baby. Don't give up on us, baby.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet. But their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, yes, it is Thursday. That means we get together with Howie Klein of the Blue America Pack and Down with Tierney. Hey, Howie.
Hello, Nicole.
I have a question for you from the chat room. Trumantown asks, can you ask Howie, was Schumer as smarmy in high school as he is now?
Yes.
Yes. Did you know him in high school? I mean, I know you went to the same high school. I didn't know that you knew him personally.
No, I didn't know him personally.
Okay.
I knew of him, but he wasn't one of my friends or anything.
Gotcha. Was he like in student government? Was he the same kind of a born leader then?
No, he wasn't in student government. He was a an ass kissing guy who tried to get really high grades, which he did. I don't know. I mean, I didn't like him, and none of my friends liked him. He was kind of well-known. He was definitely considered one of the smartest guys in his class. And he was looked at as someone who did nothing but study.
Huh. Okay. Well, I guess it worked for him.
It did. If I can remember correctly, he wound up going to Harvard.
Oh, wow. Okay. You had a lot of famous people. Bernie Sanders went to your high school as well, though he was there earlier than you were.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Wow. Wow. What school?
And aside from that, lots and lots and lots of musicians and people from the music industry.
Really? What school was it?
James Madison High School in Brooklyn.
Okay. All right. Well, Howie Klein is with us today. We had a big primary day on Tuesday. There was some good news and some bad news.
That's right. You want me to talk about that?
Sure, I'd love it.
So, because the media has got this, is on this tear right now to put down Alexandria Ocasio, and that's all they want to talk about.
Yep.
You wouldn't know that the most important thing that happened for going forward into the future was a win by a woman named Rashida Tlaib in Detroit. And the reason that I think that's so important is because Rashida is not just brilliant, which she is, and not just super progressive, which she is, but she's also a woman who served her full term in the House, the Michigan House of Representatives. So what that means is something that you and I have talked about in the past, which is that on day one, she's in Congress knowing how to write legislation, knowing how to work across the aisle, knowing how to convince her colleagues that what she's proposing is useful and worthy of being supported. And you may think that's easy, but it's not.
Right.
Most members of Congress who haven't been in that situation, it takes a year or two, or sometimes more, before they can get comfortable with that and before they can, get to the top of the learning curve. And because of someone who's already done that, it really makes a big difference. And when you look at the people who are the most productive in Congress, you get to people like Jamie Raskin, who already served in leadership in Maryland in the House, and people like Pramila Jayapal, who already served in leadership in Washington State, and Ted Lieu, who already, you know, he was a committee chairman in California, in the state Senate. So these are the kind of people that don't have to learn this stuff. They already know it. So, and they come out fighting right from the very beginning. And, you know, one of the reasons why I'm so gung-ho, for example, why I was so gung-ho on Rashida, you know, people talk about, oh, she'll be the first Muslim woman in Congress. Well, that's nice, and I have nothing against that. I think it's great, and I think it's inspirational for other Muslim women. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not for her just because of that.
Right.
I'm for her because of the what I've just been talking about. She's a super progressive who knows what she's doing. That's why I want to see her in Congress, which she's going to. And same thing for Jared Golden in Maine. He is the whip of the Maine State Senate. Again, a guy who knows how to lead because he's been doing it. A guy who knows how to write legislation. I mean, Jared Golden has been literally the tip of the spear for progressives in Maine. When, you know, they want to talk about something like raising the minimum wage, Jared is the one who writes that. Mm. When they want to talk about how to help veterans have a more dignified life, it's Jared who writes that legislation, and then Jared who goes and talks all of his colleagues into supporting it, and Jared who goes across the aisle and finds a couple of Republicans who will back it as well. So that's the kind of people that we need in Congress. We need all kinds of good – we need any kind of Democrat in Congress, to tell you the truth. But the ones that I'm most excited about are the real, real progressives who know how to do this thing. And, you know, it's not that easy. I mean, as – wonderful as Alexandria Ocasio is, and you know, Blue America supported her. We think she's great. It's going to take her a little time, like it would anybody. She's a very, very smart woman, and she'll do it fast. But it's going to still take time before for her to learn how you do these things. Mm-hmm. How do you write a piece of legislation? That doesn't, you know, that's not that simple. How do you work with people who don't already agree with you? How do you convince them that your bill is worthy of their attention and their vote? And so right now what's happening is that the conservatives, you know, maybe that's the wrong word to use. Maybe a better word to use is the status quo establishment. Uh-huh. They are doing everything they can to destroy her. I mean, this is like a 28-year-old woman who's a complete inspiration, who's going around the country campaigning for Democrats, and the establishment, both the establishment elite media and the Democratic establishment, obviously I don't have to mention what the Republicans think of her, mm-hmm. they're out to destroy her. And they're doing everything they can. And that's why when you read this coverage, it's all, you know, Alexandria Ocasio failed. I mean, everywhere you see this thing. And the fact of the matter is, she did not fail. She helped elect Rashida. Mm-hmm. She helped elect James Thompson.
Who won
big. Did you have James on your show,
by
the way?
No, I didn't, but I'd love to get him on. He had a huge victory.
He did. He got 70% of the, something like 70% of the vote. And, you know, that's a landslide. And he is, again, a very, very, very progressive guy. And, you know, how come the media doesn't want to talk about that? I mean, they're, by avoiding that connection between him and Alexandria, that's not playing fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first big event that she went to after her own victory, she ran to Wichita, Kansas. What is she doing in Wichita, Kansas? Yeah, you got it. She and Bernie Sanders put on a big event for James Thompson. And, you know, and they, you know, I think I might have mentioned this already, that they booked a small theater, and it was sold out immediately. I mean, it was free, but, you know, there were no tickets left immediately, so they had to move it to another theater that was three times bigger.
Wow.
And that sold out as well.
Wow.
So, you know, but yet the media just wants to talk about the things that didn't go as well. Some of them were incredible long shots where there was no chance these people were going to win. And what Alexandria was doing was helping to build them up for the future.
Sure.
So that they'll run again, and so that they'll be known, and so that they'll maybe, you know, maybe they'll run for Congress again, maybe they'll run for another office. But, you know, that's a strategy as well. You know, hey, the guy who was running for governor –
Abdul El-Sayed.
He's only 33 years old.
Wow.
Take my word for it. We haven't heard the last of him.
Mm-hmm.
He did an incredible campaign. And the woman who won, she's not bad.
Uh-huh.
She's not as good as him, I don't think, but she's okay. She's certainly worth rallying around and voting for against the Republican, who's an extremist. But Abdul will be back. Take my word for it.
Great. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I watched a lot of the election returns on Tuesday night, and not a word about James Thompson and the blowout victory he had. Instead, they all talked about, on the Republican side, it was Ron Estes versus Ron Estes. Like a story that doesn't matter about, you know, one iota. But that's what they, in that district, that's what they focused on. Didn't say a word about James Thompson, the true progressive winning in a landslide.
Exactly. Because they don't want to get out the message that Alexandria and Bernie can help people get elected. That's not the narrative. The narrative is everyone that they endorse failed. No one mentioned Rashida. I mean,
right.
Rashida is going to wind up being one of the most important people in Congress immediately. She has so many great ideas, just like she did in the state legislature. She has great ideas, and she knows how to get those ideas going.
Mm-hmm.
She is, but yet not a word. No one wants to talk about her. Nobody wants to talk about James Thompson. They only want to talk about the races where Ocasio failed.
Right.
She failed. They're trying to put her down. That is from the day she won and beat Joe Crowley, one of them, you know, an establishment guy. They've been out to get her. And like I said, I'm talking about elite media, Democratic establishment, and the Republicans. They were all on the same team about that. Like, get her.
Yeah, the other thing about Rashida is, if I read this correctly, there's no Republican in the race. So she won. She will
be
in Congress.
I mean, we're talking about a Detroit district where, it's one of these districts that, you know, D plus 30 or something.
Right.
It's no, even if there is a Republican candidate who's running, it's just a vanity candidate who would want to have his name on the ballot. There's nothing that the NRCC would even look at twice.
Right. This was John Conyers' seat.
Yes, this was John Conyers' seat. He was forced to retire, because he was acting inappropriately towards women on his staff.
Yep.
So that wasn't working out. He was a very good congressman in terms of legislation. He was the guy for years and years and years who's been writing the bill and improving the bill every couple of years for Medicare for All. So when you hear people talking about, you know, I'm behind that bill for Medicare for All in the House, they're talking about the bill that he wrote and has been reintroducing in every Congress for, I don't know how long, but I would guess 10 years. I mean, not 10 years, 10 sessions, 20 years.
Wow.
But, you know, he had to leave, you know, and he's very, very old.
Yes.
One of the things that happened with Rashida that was really interesting is that she also beat the dynasties. Like his, you know, immediately Conyers' son and nephew jumped in.
Right.
Conyers' nephew was on the final ballot. Conyers' son, he couldn't make it to the final ballot. Yeah, I don't want to go into that whole story, but he wasn't on the final ballot. And then the first African-American mayor of Detroit, his son, who has the same name as him, he was on the ballot too.
Wow.
And, you know, it's tough for someone like Rashida to jump in, except for one thing, which is that she has served these people in Congress, the voters in that district. She served them in the local state legislature, and they knew that she was special. You know, enough people remembered how special she was to vote for her. So that worked out really well, and I'm very, very excited about it. And in fact, just before you called, I was on the phone with People for the American Way because I'm on their board, and we were going over what a great thing that was. She was part of an organization that they founded called Young Elected Officials, where they help, people under 40 who they help them to with messaging and with issues. And, you know, that's where we have found so many great candidates. And so they endorsed her. They actually, you know, although I had met her when she was, you know, just one of many, many young elected officials, they reintroduced me to her when she decided to run for Congress. And that's why I have a good knowledge of who she is and what she's doing and why I love her so much.
That's great. You have a piece up at downwithtyranny.com. It's the top story there, how to win in November. And you cite Rashida's race. You also you talk a lot about what's going on in Atlanta, where Stacey Abrams is poised. I mean, she stands a good chance of becoming Georgia's first African-American female governor.
She would be the first African-American governor. She would also be the first female governor.
Yep.
So whether you say African-American female or, you know, first woman governor or the first black governor, she's all those things rolled up into one. And by the way, how do I know her? Same thing. Young elected officials.
Wow.
And I love her. She's fantastic. I mean, I've seen her speaking, you know, for a decade. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but she's also incredibly brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
She went to Yale. She was the the minority leader of the state legislature. And this is a woman who, you know, knows how to get things done. And she's not afraid. She's certainly not playing a woman who's playing Republican light.
No.
So, you know, there are a lot of Republicans in the state of Georgia. They're going to vote for the lunatic friend Trump guy. They're not going to vote for her. So she's not playing up to that. She is playing up to the progressive issues that she has built her career on. And if people want somebody in office who backs those issues, then they'll vote for her, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, it's going to be tough for some people to vote for a black person in Georgia. They still are reticent. But if they get to know her at all and they, you know, read about her, I think that reticence really goes away, except, from the hardcore
racist
Ku Klux Klan people.
Sure.
But, you know, that's, you know, we can forget about those people. They're lost to us anyway. You know, anyone who's a Democrat on any level that really determines what a Democrat is, you know, can forget about the Ku Klux Klan folks. They're not coming to the Democrats. They're perfectly happy with the party of Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but you know, one thing that to keep in mind, it's disconcerting to look at the numbers, the approval numbers that Trump's getting among Republicans. I always have to keep reminding myself that the number of Americans who self-identify as Republicans has been dropping. So he may have a 90% approval rating among Republicans, but I think it's now down to less than 27% of Americans identify as Republicans.
Exactly. And now what's starting, I mean, everyone says California, what happened in California now, a few years down the line, happens all over America. And that's been proven over and over again. Well, guess what? The Republicans are now the third party, not the second party anymore. The first party is the Democrats. The second party are the independents. And then the third party is the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, so that he could have, you know, and who's remaining in the party are the crazies. That's who's staying in the party.
Yeah.
The ones who are leaving, you know, not necessarily becoming Democrats, but generally some are. But generally they're just going over to, declare themselves independent voters, which is called different things in different states. But these people who are left, those are the nutcases.
Right.
Those are the lunatics. Those are racists or bigots. They're, you know, neo-fascists, neo-Nazis. That's who's getting left in the Republican Party. And also people who are really, really stupid, you know, really stupid, and don't even figure what is good for them and their family. They can't even figure that out.
No.
And you talk to them, and they are not – they can't even follow what's going on. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of this QAnon.
Yes.
Now, whatever they are – you read what they have to say, and you say, well, no one's going to believe any of this stuff.
That's right.
And then you find out, yes, what's left of the Republican Party, those are the people who believe it. I mean, this stuff is so insane. I don't know if the other group that put this out, but one of these groups put out this thing that there is a slave colony made up of young children that are being raped by rich people,
yeah.
I guess rich Democrats primarily, on Mars.
Oh, my God. I think that is
what
them.
Is wrong with these people? How do they believe that?
They're nuts.
How do they believe that there is a sex slave colony of children on Mars? You know, where does it come from? I mean, how stupid do you have to be to say, yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Right. Well, the same people who believe that, it's led by Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks. They believe
that
they're in on this sex ring. You know, I read somewhere in BuzzFeed had a feature that this whole QAnon thing is a hoax. It's you know, some, you know, Democrat trolling these idiot Republicans. Who would believe this stuff?
Yeah, it might be that, but we don't know yet exactly.
Right.
So that theory that it's people, you know, sort of making fun of these Republicans and doing it, that might be the case.
It could be.
But
right.
But no one knows for sure. I mean, they still haven't come. There's still no definitive proof on who they are and who's leading them and, you know, why they're putting out this messaging. You know, one of the things that I thought was really funny is that they say that the reason Trump keeps saying 17 angry Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, first of all, when he says 17 angry Democrats, that's just completely made up. It's insane.
Yes, right.
You know, it doesn't mean anything. 17 angry Democrats. He's been repeating it for months. And the QAnon people say that the reason that he's repeating that is because Q is the 17th letter
God.
Of the alphabet.
Oh, my God.
And he is signaling that to them that, you know, he's their friend.
Oh, my God.
Now, whatever you want to think about who is QAnon, who you might ask yourself, who is listening to this nonsense
yes.
and believing it? I mean, you meet those people that are wearing, you know, holding up those Q posters at Trump rallies.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Democrats.
Nope.
You look at the people who have those Q T-shirts. They're not Democrats.
Nope.
These are nutcase Republicans, and worse than Republicans, they're Trump fanatics.
Yeah. That's it. And you know, Trump says he likes the poorly educated. I guess that shows why.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that he picked up on that right in the beginning of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he gave it as a victory speech in Nevada, if I remember correctly. And he said, yeah, I like the poorly educated. And, you know, wow. I mean, I didn't think he was that perceptive.
Yeah, well, he knows that's his base, because the more somebody knows, the less they are apt to believe him. Look, today Mike Pence went out and started talking about the creation of the Space Force. I mean, and these are the people that are saying we can't afford Medicare for all. We can't afford, you know, education, free education for citizens. We can't afford all this stuff. Someone had something that Alexandria said in the chat room a little while. Here it is. She said, we only have empty pockets when it comes to the morally right things to do. But when it comes to tax cuts for billionaires and when it comes to unlimited war, we seem to be able to invent that money very easily. So Space Force. I mean, it's absurd. But this is the kind of shit that they're concentrating on.
Trump was tweeting about this morning, the Space Force. The other thing he was tweeting about, which got me a little bit nervous, was Red Wave. He's calling on Red Wave.
Yeah.
I mean, no one thinks there's going to be a Red Wave. Now, you know, he was saying it because it looks like Balderson probably won in Ohio, although more ballots were discovered today, and now it's even closer than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like it's going to be a an automatic recount, although we don't know yet, but that's what it looks like. But yet Trump was calling that, you know, narrow victory for, and that cost them $6 or $7 million.
That's right.
He's calling that a red wave. But then when I thought about it a little more, I thought of something else. As you know, the Russians are not remotely red anymore. But, you know, Trump doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's talking about a red wave, what I'm afraid of is that he's signaling on some level that about Russian hacking.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, about a week or so ago, there was this whole story about Missouri, about how they were already hacking the machines there to try to disadvantage Claire McCaskill.
Right.
And then today we find out they're doing the same thing in Florida.
In Florida.
That they have penetrated the machines in several Florida counties. And, you know, you had Bill Nelson flipping out.
Yep.
Because that's going to be a very, very close race. And he knows if the Russians are out, want to deliver, you know, some kind of victory to Trump in the Senate, one of the places they have to win is Florida.
Yeah, and
so we'll be hearing a lot more about the Florida voting machines in the next week or so. I mean, because he got this stuff right from the FBI and the the U.S. security services, not of course from the cybersecurity White House person, because Trump
that
fired
doesn't
him.
Exist, right? That person doesn't exist. It's frightening. I just filled out my absentee ballot for the primary. Our primary is August 28th. I had to do research over the weekend for all the judicial races, but I just filled it out, and Allison, my daughter, and my husband are filling theirs out, and we hand deliver them right to the voter registration office, rather than put them through the mail, because I don't trust anybody. but they still, they're the optical scan ballots, so they still go through a machine that I don't trust. When you do vote in person, you feed the thing through the machine. It doesn't even tell you how it saw your, you know, how it read your ballot. It just says, thank you, your vote's been recorded. Until we go back to paper ballots hand counted, all these elections are suspect.
I hope someone in your chat room is from Washington State, because my suspicion is that Washington State is strictly hand-counted paper ballots. And the reason that I came up with that is because they're still counting. I mean, What is today? Today is Thursday, and I'm trying to get the final count on Washington 5, which is a district that I'm very concerned about. And they haven't even reached the 70% mark yet.
Wow.
They're at 68.9% counted. So why is that? So it must be because, I mean, since it's a mail-in state, it's got to be I'm guessing that the ballots that they send in are not going through machines, that they're being hand-counted.
They should be. You would think. Yeah. They're obviously paper ballot that people mark, you know, with a pen or a pencil. So, I would guess that that's the way they do it there. And they've got a reasonable governor in Washington State, Jay Inslee, who was at Netroots Nation prompting some talk that he may jump in 2020.
Okay,
we'll see. Yes, they're all mail-in votes is the only thing I got. Trumantown keeps asking about how do you say his name? Kaniela Ng in Hawaii.
Ng, Kaniela Ng. His primary is on Saturday, this Saturday. I think we've gone over this before, but having any kind of election on a Saturday makes it possible for people who, you know, find it difficult to get away in the middle of the week, in the middle of the day to vote.
Yep.
And this makes it a lot easier for people to vote. So that's a really good thing. His primary is Saturday. He's up against a lot of extremely conservative Democrats, and I'd like to see him win. But again, what they're doing to Alexandria right now, what the establishment is doing, and the elite media, they're doing to Kaniela in advance. I mean, every kind of horrible lie that anyone could invent, any kind of horrible interpretation of anything, they are like flooding the media with that stuff. So I don't know how he can win. He feels optimistic. I'm just like flipping out, because he's another one. He's from the state legislature. He was in a leadership role there, chairman of an important committee, and he could wind up in Congress. I guarantee you, if he were in Congress on the first day, he would start introducing bills.
Right.
That's how driven this guy is. He would make an amazing congressman.
So Hawaii is this Saturday. Then what states have their primaries on Tuesday? Do you know offhand?
Well, not on the top of my head, I don't. But I mean, I could find. Well, I would say I could find out, but I see we're running out of time.
We're getting close to the end. Well, I'll look it up and I'll put it up on the blog, along with a link to Blue America, because there are, again, as we say all the time, there are a lot of really good progressive candidates out there, and this is the time that we have to come out and support them, get them through the primary, so that then you can vote for all the Democrats and feel really good about it in November.
Exactly. Although there is one state that I do have on top of mind for Tuesday, and that's Wisconsin. And that's where Randy Bryce is running. And that's really, really, really crucial.
Yes. And he does have an opponent, doesn't he, in the primary?
It kind of. It's really a vanity opponent who jumped in the race, you know, primarily to make some money for herself.
Oh, God.
A horrible situation. I'll explain it more on my blog after the thing is over.
Okay.
You know, once this is done, I'll talk about her and what she's doing. I haven't wanted to talk about it before.
I gotcha.
But she's absolutely awful.
Oh, boy. Well, go out, and if you're in Wisconsin, by all means, Randy Bryce this Tuesday. Hawaii Saturday, Wisconsin Tuesday. It's primary season. Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com and the Blue America Pack. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your insight, Howie, and I will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nicole. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye. And you, tomorrow, Juliana Forlano will join us. See you then.